it's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate, and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
Okay, we're joined here today with two people involved in a project called the Lobelia Commons. It's based more or less around New Orleans. I'll let the people that are on the call, they're going to talk about it. But they're creating a sort of autonomous anti-capitalist version of the Farmer's Almanac. We'll talk about what that is and what it will look like, and moreover, the projects that they're working on. But just kind of like get into what Lobelia Commons is, and then we'll get into the Farmer's Almanac project.
Lobelia Commons started at the beginning of the pandemic. Basically, there was like this rush for a lot of like mutual aid projects were popping up, and a lot of them were kind of like resting on previous infrastructures that existed. Like, so there was like this food share program, for instance, that was using excess like wholesale like vegetables and produce that would be going to restaurants, but was just going to the dumpster. So that was like a food share program that was run out of this one, like short-lived info shop space. And when the pandemic hit, that they stopped getting all of their like the orders started coming into the port from wherever the hell they're coming from, only like half full. And so we started not having enough to like get those mutual aid projects, like keep them afloat. So then mutual aid projects started like buying groceries and so on and so forth. And there was like such a swell of volunteers to the various mutual aid projects that were existing in the early pandemic. And we realized that, well, we should probably just start coming up with creative ways to grow our own food in ways that are like challenging and productive and make sense in the various neighborhoods and in the like very specific space that is New Orleans, which is like even if it weren't in a swamp, like just it being subtropical, it being in a sinking city, like all these factors, New Orleans is a really difficult place to like grow at just a regular annual garden, for instance. So we started a number of projects since then. We've started a couple of gardens, which are like, have like explicitly mutual aid harvest that goes directly to mutual aid groups. We started like a collaborative mushroom initiative to like basically produce large scale mushroom, harvest. There's a few other projects that are going on, like more experimental forest garden lot. Some informational stuff. We started an initiative called the Decentralized Nursery, which is basically just like kind of this thing that already happens in most cities where like gardeners will be starting their gardens and they'll start like a few extra plants and leave them on their porch or whatever on their stoop, for their neighbors. And so we basically just are trying to encourage more of that and to try and help people link up with that decentralized nursery. And it seems to be going pretty well.
Having tried to do some kind of garden projects, you know, in the past, like one thing that has really been amazing about this year has been just the kind of the way that the early pandemic kind of like just like broke the spell of the grocery store or whatever and really made a lot of people understand that it was important to do this stuff. So I don't know. I've just been amazed by like the amount of energy and the amount of new people that we've met and how easy it's been to like draw new people into the project. Cause there's so many different little projects going on. It's really easy for people to kind of like just sort of dip their toes into different things or figure out where they fit, you know?
Yeah. That's been like one of the, like big successes just by virtue of kind of not doing a mutual aid project where it's just like packaging groceries, putting them in boxes, delivering them or something like that. Like we have like work days and stuff where you just kind of like in the garden, or we're like learning how to, you know, make produce mushrooms together. Like, there's like an interest there. And so we kind of get this interesting overlap of people that are like already drawn towards either like mutual aid type of activities or like all that entails, like very subcultural, connections, but also are like interested in autonomy specifically because they're interested in how to, you know, survive or whatever this, crazy world that we're entering into, which I think a lot of people in New Orleans, especially like a lot of young people, like have on the back of their mind constantly of like, just like kind of like low key prepper mentality always because hurricane season is like, you know, constant reality. So we've met a lot of people that are like, we wouldn't have normally, or maybe you would see at a demo, but you wouldn't ever like have a conversation with them. So it leads for really interesting conversations during like work days or whenever we share space together, which in itself has been really important for like during the pandemic.
When you talk about this area that you all are cultivating for to kind of feed into the various mutual aid projects, how large of an area are we talking about? Like how extensive are the gardens that we're speaking of?
I mean, I'd say they're pretty small for right now, probably like between a few different sites that have like fed into the mutual aid project with like varying degrees of consistency. Like there's one garden I'm thinking of that's pretty small, but has been like the most consistent producer, of veggies and whatnot. But probably all of them together is like, less than a quarter acre or maybe about a quarter acre or something. The parts that we're actually cultivating at least. Though we're kind of expanding like that, forest garden lot, that was mentioned, maybe adds another quarter acre or something. And we're just starting to develop that.
I think, you know, we kind of like expanded really quick at the beginning, with like kind of classic, annual gardens, trying to do like the not community garden thing, like where it's like, you know, trying to make it like as productive as possible and trying to make it make sense. But, it's again, like pretty challenging. And oftentimes like community gardens kind of end up, either like, you know, everyone has like a bad mental health week. If that happens a couple times in a row during a pandemic, you know, all your stuff could be dead because, you know, it's super hot in the summer or, you know, it doesn't rain for a while. So like watering gets more challenging. So I think as we expand more, I think the goal will to be like working, in partnership to like help. Like there's one mutual aid group in New Orleans that's reached out a few times about helping us, like having us help them start a garden for themselves, and they can kind of take it over, and then that can go into their distribution. So rather than like making this like behemoth organization where we have to like keep our eyes on too many different things, like try not to do too much or whatever.
Yeah, and I think similarly, with a lot of our plant giveaways, like I think we try to be really available to people if they have questions about the plants that we're giving them and everything, but you know, we're the plants that we were giving away, the, you know, okra seedlings via delivery or whatever, or the fruit trees that we're going to be giving away in the springtime for people to plant in their like front yard or backyard or whatever. The idea is that we'll just sort of, you know, either just pass the plant off entirely or maybe just help plant it and then step back. And then it's not really our project anymore, but it becomes this thing that hopefully starts to generalize as more and more people, you know, see their neighbors getting a tree in the front yard and that kind of thing.
How much food is being produced in the area that we're talking about?
That's actually a good question because we haven't really quantified it, and I know that neither of us has been like there all the time, so it's kind of we can try to answer that question, but definitely like people they're taking them to a couple different mutual aid projects. There's the delivery one, and then also they go to the free fridges around town sometimes. Well, we got a lot of okra this year. That was definitely our biggest producer. We had like hella okra, and like often we were struggling to even harvest it fast enough. Cause as some folks may know, like okra, if you don't harvest it, like within a couple days of it developing, it gets too like hard and woody to really eat. But yeah, what was some of the other good producers this year?
There was a lot of greens, and root vegetables out of one of the gardens that was fairly successful. I think that most of that went to the mutual aid project. Nomag was going there like weekly boxes of greens. But yeah, the Lobelia Commons is like a pretty expansive project, and so we don't really always have our hands in every different thing. So
let's turn now to the Almanac project. If you're trying to imagine what the Farmer's Almanac might be, you probably have seen it if you've maybe in a grocery store, at the hardware store. If you look over, it's usually kind of one of those things that's always sold kind of right next to the counter. I don't know if you want to just explain kind of like what the Farmer's Almanac is and why it's important. It's, you know, come out for, you know, so long. Like, what is it used for, and what made you want to make a different version of it?
Yeah, well, the Farmer's Almanac is kind of like a funny thing. I feel like anyone who's like a gardener has like been like in like the grocery store, or like just kind of like, oh, this would be like a zany purchase to get, you know, like let's like look at it and look at all the like Christian stuff that's in it, or like the weird kind of like astrological stuff, or, you know, like it's kind of like a cornucopia of like just like random stuff, like not really too in depth in any one thing. And so we had kind of like joked around about like doing, oh, what if we did like an anarchist farmer's almanac or whatever? Like, what if, like, what would a spin on it? And then as like the joke kind of got more serious, like we kind of realized that like, well, if you look at the farmer's almanac, it's like, it's a pretty static thing. It's like determining the weather patterns, is one big feature of it, for instance, of like, you know, you can look through and it'll tell you on pretty much any given day what the weather is going to be predicted already. And if anyone who's like living and paying attention in the world, it's a lot more difficult to just like carpet predict what the future is going to be in terms of like weather or climate. So that's like one thing that like felt kind of important in terms of doing it, is like opening up kind of space for like talking about, well, like, the climate map for like the USDA hardiness map is shifting and at a pretty, you know, alarming pace. And especially for those of us who live in these areas where it's like, you know, we're on subtropics, you can kind of grow some tropical stuff here. And like, we still kind of get freezes, like it snowed in New Orleans a bunch recently. Like trying to come up with something that at least in dialogue with that. And then going kind of one further in terms of like, how do we start to embed some like anti-colonial perspectives in growing food? So that's not, we're not just like, you know, doing a nice, pleasant gardening project. How is it constantly challenging the legitimacy of the state that governs over the land that we're stewarding? How do we kind of come up with ways that are challenging food production and food monoculture, in ways that are like going to be beneficial and not just kind of like blindly following some kind of like green cure-all or whatever. So it's a pretty, in terms of like what we want to produce, it's like a pretty open-ended thing. We've received like a handful of submissions so far, like a lot of like how-tos and, kind of like skill sharing kinds of things. And there's like some analysis as well, starting to trickle in. But basically it's like the general content of the Farmer's Almanac is pretty brief. Like, there's not really like a lot of like very wordy things. It's generally a pretty accessible thing. It's usually a pretty like lighthearted thing. So it's kind of just a way of like getting something in people's hands that aren't, like I was kind of saying earlier about the like garden work days or whatever, like are like our common point is the desire to grow food. And there's people who do that all over the world. How do we start to have conversations and start to like link up with people who are like fairly like-minded or encourage, you know, more like anti-colonial thinking, maybe like anti-authoritarian thinking, by way of talking about like what you're growing or like what do you, you know, different strategies for growing things, what worked for you, what didn't work for you. So a pretty central part of the Farmer's Almanac will be to distribute it really widely. And since we're based in New Orleans, we'll have some in New Orleans for sure, in like whatever, like alternative spaces or something. But probably primarily the work of distribution will be going around the South, primarily like the Southeast, the Gulf South generally, and going to like barber shops, thrift stores, whatever, like consignment shops, this type of thing, and just like kind of just asking if they'll sell it for like $1.50 and they can keep the profits, and so start to develop some relationships with those shopkeepers, while also starting to get it like into places that we normally wouldn't be having conversations because we're so, you know, either alienated by this, that, or the other thing. So that's it. What kind of started as like a that would be a funny thing to do has turned into kind of like, wait, actually, this is like probably a pretty good idea and already in line with a lot of the things that we're kind of trying to promote with our work already.
No, all that sounds great. I mean, yeah, the one thing I would just emphasize like about it is, things being like kind of, we're looking for things that are kind of like place based or acknowledge the kind of uneven terrain that, that we're dealing with, not just kind of the, cause like, you look at a farmer's almanac and it'll often, or any kind of gardening resource or something, and often they aren't even specific about what region they're really good for. It'll just say like, in March, you plant tomatoes or whatever. And you don't really, they aren't honest about like, well, actually, we're only talking about the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic and the Midwest or whatever when we say that. Or you are finding, you know, or you have to go hunt for really specific regional resources that are like a Southeastern guide to gardening or whatever. And like, you know, we definitely can't, there's no way to have a resource that actually tells everybody what they need to plant in March, you know? And I think what we are kind of looking for this to acknowledge is more about like, you know, you're not going to read something that's going to tell you how to grow potatoes, but maybe it'll tell you how this one person grew potatoes in Georgia in their particular conditions or whatever. Cause even aside from just like, you know, the variation that exists already, we are in this like unpredictable kind of climate situation where like, knowing that you're supposed to plant tomatoes in March doesn't really help you. What we actually need to be learning now is like actually what temperature does the soil need to be for the tomatoes to germinate, and how consistent do the air temperatures need to be at whatever threshold during the first however many weeks of its life as a seedling when it's extra sensitive, and those sorts of things, and like, you know, ways we can actually start to like, you know, really navigate some of these changes together and like develop some of those resources for each other.
Is there an expected time frame that you all are trying to get this out by, or is this sort of something that you're working on steadily right now?
The deadline for like submissions is the 31st of January. We're like encouraging people to get to us like as soon as possible if they have like a pitch or whatever, just like out of interest of saving stress for the designers and like on the back end or whatever. But hopefully should be laid out and printed towards the end of February, and being like mailed around the country and start to be distributed around the Southeast. And that's another thing, if like people elsewhere in the country are interested in linking up about trying to like distribute it or whatever, like totally should get in touch, because we'll be happy to like mail at cost or whatever we can figure out.
Well, I wanted to switch now and just talk about autonomous gardening and land projects in general. So what are you excited about by these sort of endeavors?
I mean, I can just start off in a really practical sense. I don't know if I can say anything deeper about it quite yet, but it has actually been so much easier this year. As somebody who's been growing food for, I guess, the last like 10 years or so in the South in a few different places, like this year has been the only time when I haven't had any headache over distribution. Because usually it's like, oh, I'm growing all this food, and then it's sort of an afterthought of like, oh, how do I give this away? That's like not even a problem anymore. There's like free fridges and free food stands and all these different other things going on where it's just like I have this existing infrastructure I can just hand it over to. It's been great.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that's been like a concern with the gardens in town specifically, is like figuring out which mode of distribution we're going to use, rather than like we've occasionally been like, well, what if we did this in terms of distribution, or what if we did that? But it's like that work is already kind of done. Like there's like existing infrastructure. Like there's like Nomag has like an entire walk-in cooler that they built. Like it's they're like fully functioning and stuff. So we don't need to even worry about that. I would say in terms of like, you know, shifting towards like more rural spaces and like, you know, kind of working in terms of like autonomous food production rurally. Well, obviously you have like this scaling up or whatever. But the realistic thing is like the social element that's, kind of like key, because having like the gardens in town or whatever, like, well, you can just ride your bike down the block to like go work and like help make the thing happen. But, really it's like you kind of have to like be making connections out there and stuff. Like, I personally kind of worried about like the tendency of people to like leave the cities or whatever, go and like live like a charmed, whatever agricultural experience, but not really engaging with the, you know, the people around them or the people whose land they're on or so on and so forth. And that feels like a really, often washed over, aspect of like when people say they're like, oh, starting a land project, quote unquote. And it's like land project just kind of signs for intention, when it's actually like often the like intention isn't met with action or whatever. So, like the most exciting projects for me are the ones like that are working rurally and are like genuinely connecting with like neighbors when possible, other rural farmers, like having conversations with people that like aren't necessarily from their economic, race, class, you name it, background, because like, in terms of like, being like imagine like New Orleans as an example is a pretty specific one, but like imagining New Orleans as a food autonomous city is really challenging, because like it needs farmers from like pretty far away. Like its food shed is like really, cut off in a lot of ways. Like the ability for there to be like any amount of farming space near New Orleans is really challenging for a number of reasons. Mostly because of like, flood protection and, you know, these various like river management systems that like allow cities to be in places like New Orleans, but also like complicate, having farms. So a lot of the food that enters New Orleans, comes from really far away, from Georgia and Alabama and stuff. Like, so creating connections in like in a really specifically rural way with like minded towards the relationship between rural farms, autonomous farms, and the city, and like movements for autonomy within the city is really, really important if we're actually thinking in terms of like, building autonomy in New Orleans. So like we can't really have, in my mind, you can't really have one without the other. And maybe New Orleans is a very specific example, but I think it would behoove any autonomous movement, in any city in the country to, or in the world to be in, you know, good, strong relation with rural farmers as well.
You're listening to It's Going Down, part of the Channel Zero Anarchist Podcast Network. Follow us online at itsgoingdown.org and on Twitter at @IGD_news. In order for It's Going Down to continue into the future, though, we need your support. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to sign up to donate monthly or give us a one-time donation. Again, go to itsgoingdown.org/shop and sign up to donate monthly or give us a one-time donation in order for us to grow our work into 2021. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to it. What do you see as the potential of these projects be linking up with each other more?
That feels almost easier. It feels like through Twitter and through like these like kind of informal networks, and through honestly like the kind of like social world that happens in like these like metropolitan spaces or whatever. Like if you have relationships with, like-minded people in those metropolitan spaces, it's kind of easy. Like, you know, I live in, southwestern Mississippi, and I'm pretty much every time I go back to New Orleans, which is only like an hour drive away or something, you know, I'm talking to someone and they're like, oh, do you know so-and-so who's, you know, also out there? That kind of relationship seems fairly easy to find those people, for me at least. But I think that we often get lost in like trying to seek those pockets out. Like, you know, we just met with someone, recently who's like, you know, three generations, you know, rice farming, and like, finding those people that are like already out there, and aren't going back to the land because they already like been on the land or whatever. I personally think interesting, but I don't know. Maybe you have more to add.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that's super important. And like, I think in terms of scale, there is like a lot of potential for a lot of that stuff to really proliferate and really for rural spaces to like become a lot more populated and a lot more like crowded, hopefully like in a good way. And I think that like one of the ways that we can like hopefully navigate that transition in a good way is to try to establish, those connections early on. Cause like one thing that's happening right now, just kind of like to zoom out a little bit, is like, I don't know exactly what the bookending years of it are supposed to be, but just based on like the aging of the baby boomers, we're like somewhere within, you know, the middle of the decade in which the greatest transfer of land in the last like lifetime, at least in the last like, you know, 50 or 60 years or something is happening right now. Because all these folks are dying and they're passing on the land to their kids, and their kids are mostly selling it to big conglomerates and stuff. But there's like, yeah, there's going to be, and also obviously with COVID and people starting to move out of the cities and stuff, there's like already, this transition happening. And yeah, I think we could imagine ways that it could go down that would like, look pretty terrible and dystopian. And, you know, we just have like, you know, rural life becomes like, you know, you have your like tech landlord who like, zooms into a job in the city and like owns the whole countryside and you like work for him or something. But like, you know, I mean, to think about it in a more liberatory way, you know, I am definitely always thinking about like what the medium horizon for New Orleans is, you know, being as low as it is and everything. And like, you know, there is really a sense that like within our lifetime or something, like a lot of people are going to have to leave New Orleans, you know, or there's going to be a lot of big storms coming and stuff like that. And I think there's just like a lot of really incredible potential to to have, especially if people already have a connection with the land and already have a practice and a cultural practice of growing food and having a communal, a sense of a food commons and communal food practices within the city. Like when it comes time to leave, like hopefully that's the kind of culture that like holds people together and also allows them to like move into those new spaces or wherever people are displaced to, in a good way. That is like harmonious with the people who are already there and everything.
Yeah. Just to, add to that a bit too, I think in light of like whatever, like gaining density rurally, like obviously there's like, you know, those are comrades or whatever who aren't living in the city. But trying to like keep a focus on like building capacity and skills, knowledge, that could be brought back into the city. So like you're saying with, you know, the very likely possibilities for like the future of New Orleans and generally like kind of all of southeastern Louisiana, with like the regime of like flood management that's been on the Mississippi River for like 100 years, like starting to learn how to work like machinery, like learning ways for like flood management, ways of like producing in flood, out of flood, these types of things. And then being able to bring that into the city. So like, should there be a, you know, inclement circumstance, be it like, I don't know, an uprising or, massive depopulation or what have you, we then have, you know, friends who are trained and ready to bring either tractors or, you know, whatever kind of machinery to like make things happen without having to like ask for permission or learn how to do it.
We saw the panic in their eyes as they locked the country down. There were millions of people forced to stay inside the house. The kids couldn't go to school. Most of us couldn't go to work. Society was crumbling, and things were only getting worse. Doctors and the nurses made their final plea. They said you've got to heed the warnings that you see on your TV. The hospitals will collapse, many thousands will die. This is not a rehearsal. Things are serious this time. So no matter what happens or where the road might lead, raise a glass to the ones on the front line in our time of need. While the bankers and landlords will hide away in shame, it's working class people who will save the world again. Everyone was scared. They knew the bills would still arrive. Anxiety increasing as people struggle to survive. But the worst is yet to come. The death toll soon will shock us all. But still 500,000 people stand up and answer to the call. And no matter what happens or where the lead, raise a glass to the ones on the front line in our time of need. While the bank Bars and landlords will hide away in shame. It's working class people who will save the world again. So no matter what happens or where the road might lead, raise a glass to the ones on the front line in our time of need. While the bankers and landlords will hide away in shame, the working class people will save the world again. The working class people.
I wanted to ask, part of the, you know, mainstream conversation so much is based around this idea that there's a culture war within the United States. That's been a staple of, you know, mainstream capitalist politics for decades now. But there's so much impetus that's put on the idea that we're split between, you know, the rural and the big cities. And, you know, as you pointed out, there was, you know, a lot of people are being pushed out of larger cities. There's actually a recent article, and it's going down, that was published, that was talking about, you know, as we go into the future, you know, more and more so the way the capital is constructed and, like, you know, where things are being produced or energy is more so happening outside of big cities, which I think is another interesting point. But I'm curious, just in terms of, you know, people in autonomous anti-capitalist circles forming relationships with people, in rural areas. And I don't want this to just be code word just for, like, working class white people, because obviously there's a lot of people that live, you know, in rural areas beyond, just rural white people. But I'm just curious, do you see this as a way to kind of, like, bridge those divides, you know, just so people can recognize that we're not the scary Antifa that's gonna, you know, kick their puppies and stab their grandmas?
Well, I think we probably have two radically different answers to this, in that, like, we live in, kind of two different, rural souths or whatever. So I'm in, like, a really black county, in Mississippi. And so, you know, when I talk to folks in my neighborhood about, like, what I want to do, and, like, you know, talking in various ways of, like, regenerative agriculture or agroforestry or, like, you know, cultivating mushrooms, I kind of get, like, laughed at a little bit, and, like, we joke about it. And then, you know, it's always in good faith. I always, like, promise to, like, you know, bring over a harvest or whatever, some stuff like that. So I think it kind of depends a little bit in terms of, like, what you're producing and, like, how it relates to people, like, around you, I think is a really big question. But you could probably elaborate, because your situation is quite different.
Yeah. And the place I'm located in, is in, southwestern Louisiana. And it's a much, much whiter neighborhood. Not particularly low income either. A lot of, like, really large, agricultural, like, monoculture fields around, and, like, relatively sparse housing. And yeah, we're really, you know, the place I live at, you know, has only really been trying to do the grow food thing for a couple of years now. And we're just this year kind of getting into really trying to, like, make better connections with immediate neighbors and stuff. It's been a lot easier to sort of, like, be, like, a little bit of a pole that draws in people from, like, a slightly wider area, but, like, our literal neighbors and stuff. Just this season, we, like, sent a Christmas card out to everybody, within, like, a half mile of us, basically, just, like, introducing ourselves as, like, a, you know, little free fruit tree kind of nursery and propagation hub, and offering a free fruit tree once it's planting time sometime in, like, March or something, and put our phone number on there. So yeah, I mean, one thing that I'm personally sensing is that, like, in terms of, like, the intensity of that culture war that you're talking about, or however we want to describe it. I'm personally looking forward to the climate under Biden much more so than under Trump, because I feel like I can easily like level with people and like kind of get along on the basis that like none of us like Joe Biden. Whereas like, you know, under Trump, if the conversation were to turn to Trump, then it's like, you know, could become a little bit more dicey. But, I actually think there's going to be a lot of potential to like build bridges across that supposed gulf or whatever, because yeah, everybody wants to, you know, have an interesting, delicious fruit tree or something, or, you know, and it is, again, yeah, like you said, just a way to actually meet people and get beyond those kind of preconceptions that people have based on, you know, what people look like or where they're coming from or how they talk or something.
Yeah, I guess would parrot that a bit, because even though I'm in a much different zone, no matter who I'm speaking with, if we're talking like politics, which I generally, you know, try to avoid just because there's no real reason to, the general sense is always like, oh, Biden, you know, like, or like, is he really any better? You know, like, no matter who I'm speaking with, even if they're like, you know, someone I might suspect to be right wing, they're never really like super fired up about Trump. And if there's someone near me that's like, you know, ostensibly would be like really fired up about, I don't know, like other political directions, like locally, no matter what they're talking about, they're never really interested in Biden. So I feel kind of similarly that Biden will be kind of a general groan of a conversation.
Well, just one last overarching question. I know we touched a little bit on this before, but I'm curious how you see these projects maybe intersecting with other struggles or other things going on.
So, I mean, I think the you know, kind of the big obvious one is definitely a connection to support with like the mutual aid projects that have been happening in the cities specifically. And, you know, we'll see what continues to happen in terms of that in the cities and rurally. But early in the pandemic, as one example, the City Waste Union went on strike. So the hoppers there, you know, who are collecting garbage, they went on strike, had a wildcat strike, and like the mutual aid projects were like supporting them. And so, you know, you can imagine these kind of alternative supply lines basically between like autonomous gardens, both in the city and farms rurally, connected with supporting like striking workers, for instance, or similarly offering solidarity to people suffering from evictions or challenging their evictions, which is also like a huge thing, obviously everywhere, but also really big in New Orleans right now, as like New Orleans specifically isn't an average city, obviously, but like, you were getting like a lot of like Airbnbs are still doing fine in a lot of ways in New Orleans, because we're just getting tons of people who are like, well, New York sucks right now. And, you know, I can't see any of my friends, but I've always wanted to live in New Orleans. And so they just come and like, literally, I just heard about someone who like got a month in an Airbnb, and they're like, I don't even know what that costs. But so a lot of those struggles are like really pronounced as well. So just, you know, just even more reason to, develop like greater logistical capacities, whether that's like larger fridge space or like abilities to move food or abilities to grow food. Like all these are like super connected, and you can't really, like we were saying earlier, like having those, networks for distribution already together really helps no matter what the struggle is, like if you know, in a moment of uprising, like being able to kick those into high gear is like great if you're already doing it.
Yeah, we have to get a lot more tractors before we can, you know, catch up with the folks around the Zod, for example.
Anything else you want to touch on? Anything else we didn't cover? You know, love to talk about anything else that's on your mind that you want to bring up.
I think that's pretty good. We've been mostly just focused on the almanac recently and kind of getting some plans together for the upcoming growing season and stuff. So just to repeat it. Yeah, if anyone's still, I'm not sure when this will go to air, but if anyone's interested in submitting, they totally should. We could use like all kinds of help, specifically like also really looking for help with the like monthly filling out like what each month will have. And there's like tons of room for creativity in terms of like what that looks like. Submitting analysis, you can go to our, I think on our Instagram page, there's like a post that has the full like, prompt or whatever for the call for submissions, and you can always email us or DM us or whatever, and we'd be happy to talk about potential pitches or whatever.
We're also happy to talk with folks who are feeling inspired or looking to start some like similarly like autonomous or distributed projects or decentralized nursery or whatever else, you know, similar to what we're doing. Like we love to talk it through with folks in other cities who are trying to do similar but different things. So just reach out.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.